It's time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Habgood.
For BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years.
Hello and welcome to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years in the tyre industry. BF Goodrich will be there to drive you on your next on or off-road adventure. Redmond, we're not too far away from the Australian Open before we get into all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Something's been grinding my gears a little bit. We've had all the international tennis stars come into our country, which has been great. I'm all for it. I think it's an important part of trying to maintain some sort of normality, and that's hosting and providing Australian audiences with whether it be the Australian Open or the F1s or whatever it might be. We've got to try and facilitate that where we can. But what has got me laughing is some of the tennis players complaining on social media, and I'm not sure whether they've read the tea leaves necessarily about sort of what the entire world, the current pandemic that everyone's going through, but probably more particularly Melburnians and the lockdowns that they've gone through throughout 2020. I think that's been something that's been well read by, you know, some of Australia's biggest tennis stars. Well, not Australia's, the world's biggest tennis stars.
Good morning, Patrick. That was a big intro before I got a word in.
Yeah, it's unusual.
I couldn't agree more. What's his name, that bloke, number one or number two? What's his name, Djokovic or something?
Djokovic, yeah. Well, he's only
one. I'm not a massive
tennis follower. He's won 15 Australian Open.
That's in the category. That's in the category of soccer for me, tennis. But I think it's great that the idea of coming here to play and give, like you said, the audience something to watch, because over during COVID, football, what you did, played, was save me. Like, I haven't followed a year like I ever have before, and I think the tennis will do the same, but shut up and do your quarantine. I don't even know what's going on, but Dan Andrews, my man. I haven't agreed with a lot of things he said, but I happened to watch his press conference, a bit of it the other day, and served it to Djokovic pretty good.
No one follows Dan Andrews' press conferences closer
than you. I don't
think
I've missed one. Every day it comes on the phone, I get the notification from advertiser, Nine News, you name it, I get it.
Are you worried about sort of, can I go out in the boat? Can I cross borders? You've obviously had a good little sort of patch of time, apart from obviously the tennis players coming, where it's looking increasingly likely that there'll be relaxing of the borders, hopefully.
That's what I was
less sort of
during the week.
Essentially litigation to go through in order to cross borders. So it's all self-fulfilling for you, isn't it?
That was the reason I was listening during the week, was I'm just learning when I don't have to get a swab and isolate for 3 days to go to Eden, because I'm hanging to go to the Marlin. Speaking of Marlin, up on the New South Wales coast, oh my God, every Victorian is that annoyed.
And
the fishing is amazing.
Inshore Marlin as well. So talk us through this. Normally when you fish offshore New South Wales, or fish New South Wales rather, you're having to head offshore to chase these beautiful black marlin. But at the moment, and if you watch anything that Al McGlashan is doing at the moment, there's great opportunity to catch really good-sized marlin without having to travel 45 million kilometres offshore.
Well, the black marlin run that generally happens, like you said, Al posted during the week, chasing black marlin in the inner reefs, like you said before, you've got all the inner reefs from Bermagui, you've got the 6 Mile Reef and whatnot. It's a good place to start looking. It holds bait, so therefore there's no depth that a marlin fishes off. The reason that they're usually out wide is to do with the continental shelf and the way your pressures work with your updwellings. They run off the, like a blue marlin tends to be in the tide in the deeper side of the continental shelf, in that like can be onwards to 2,000 metres.
Yep.
Where your striped marlin are on that inside of it, so you're talking that 100 to sort of that 180 in between there. That's where you tend to start looking for your marlin. That's if you can find water along that side of the continental shelf is where you're going to find the fish. But if there's food, there's no rule that a marlin can't swim any closer to eat the bait fish. And black marlin, especially smaller black marlin, and right along Sydney and the likes, you're going to have your marlin push in at some point, your black marlin, and they're going to feed in close. You don't tend to get the numbers like you do out wide, because quite often they're not stripes, they are black marlin. And black marlin will, I guess, school up as such, but your striped marlin on the continental shelf that we're seeing off Burmy at the moment, multiple boat captures, I'm talking like 4, 5, 6, and it's starting from well above Bermagui, right down to Eden as well. So it is all fishing red hot. And they're getting them on, a lot of people are getting them on lures as well. Because they're not bait balling as hard yet, that will come, but bringing them up on teasers, switch baiting them as well, which has been good. So yeah, it's great to see that it's not as a Victorian, but it is good to see.
Do you reckon because of the lack of interstate boat pressure, so really it's majority just the locals that are being able to fish these different locations. You're not getting as much boat pressure on the fishing, therefore they're not as temperamental when it comes to captures. There's not the pressure like we see when the tuna go off around Port Phillip Bay. All of a sudden you have, you know, 1,000 boats on them and they're really temperamental. You catch up to them and all of a sudden they dive back down. And it's really hard fishing. So do you think we're seeing in New South Wales, because there hasn't been the allowance to be able to travel in and out, and there's been so much uncertainty, that it's improved the capture rates and your chances of actually catching fish?
I'm going to go with... It would have some sort of effect on it, 100%, but I'm going to go with no, because Trapman Bermagui posted last week or the week before saying that you cannot get a car park at the Bermagui boat ramp. So you still got all the, we'll call them the New South Walians, all of those people.
I think it's New South Welshmen, but go on.
I like that one. I like my version. And he reckons it's just full. It's just people, which is good for... You got to remember, these guys are affected hard last year with the fires, and now COVID.
Massively.
So it's great to see. And what sort of ticks me off a bit, and I'm not going to go into the whole COVID crap like that too much, but I think if heading, I know we, whatever he wants to do, keep cases from traveling, blah, 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 but to go to Eden and go camping at the campsite with my mates, and like, if you do it smart, and I don't know, there must be a way to do it. And I know it's lightened off quite a bit at the minute, which is really cool. But Mallacoota's 50 minutes from Eden. What's the difference between going to Mallacoota to Eden? Like, I know, but then I know the next question is, then you go to Eden, then you go up further and Correct. It carries on. But that's just me whinging.
But it's never it's never going to be perfect. And we've seen that throughout absolutely everything that's been sort of rolled out across the country. There's certain things that don't make sense, but it's just trying to do it as best as it can. Clearly, in order to get to a stage where we can... where the country can roll out this vaccine and we can slowly start to work through it. Let's get to your week in fishing. There's been a fair bit of prep that's gone into your little foray at Port Welshpool.
Yes, yeah, so I headed down there during the week, caught up with you, had a meal with you on Tuesday and told you I'm going to go away on the Wednesday. And I ended up leaving Tuesday afternoon, but I fished Wednesday, Thursday, and didn't I pick some good conditions? It was beautiful down there. So what we did was, it's what we have in Victoria, and I know I talk about traveling to New South Wales and contradict myself a little bit, but what we have here in Victoria is pristine. From the South Australia side, like right along Robe, the beaches, everything you can do down there, Linky. And I'm not talking about Victoria. I'm talking down to Robe, New South Wales.
Talk about contradicting yourself.
I was going back to
Victor Harbour. It's a beautiful part of the world.
It is good. What we have over that side of it, and I did that this time last year, and then over the straight-day long weekend, and then what we have here in Victoria, not many people know that. Everyone goes, let's go to the dunes, or let's go to New South Wales, along New South Wales coast. Port Welshpool, where I went down, is beautiful. It is literally beautiful down there. We launched at Welshpool in the inlet there, the port, I should call it, and we travelled out of Welshpool and headed out, and we planned to stay on the boat overnight. And Refuge Cove, which is, once again, a beautiful place. It is untouched, pristine down there, and we headed out chasing the kingfish, and we're fortunate enough to get some beautiful kingfish. But what we did was, we like I said, stayed on the boat and we kitted ourselves up, so I had extra fuel on the boat, made sure I didn't even get close to using my fuel on the boat. But I just always, if I have 40 litres on the boat, yeah, I pretty much know with 40 litres I can pretty much get anywhere. When I say anywhere, up to 50 kilometres travelling at a reasonable speed, I reckon I'll get no worries. So that's just to cover my backside. I'm going to review the jump pack I took as well, because the jump pack I took on the boat, and I know we've done this a few times, but I think it's been a little while ago since we've done it. I think that's important. So I had squid that I'd caught that day, and the squid were a little bit tough at one point in time. So what I wanted to do was keep the bait that I worked hard for the day before to fish the Thursday morning. So I wanted to keep my live bait tank going overnight. Yes, I turned it on to one battery and the likes, but no, I didn't have any dramas.
You always get worried, don't you?
You just do. You just panic. You just, even in my head before I'm leaving, I'm like, I need to start the boat to make sure it's running. I'm like, pretty sure I fished yesterday. Like, so it's like, it's not going to have issues. And you always do the checks that you I'm glad I do them. I'm glad I'm doing them because when you go on a trip and you're spending money, like, not that we spent on cabins and the likes, but I still have to use fuel to get there, the ferry on the way over. I tell you what, if you want to invest in something, it's probably too late now, but that bloody car ferry, my missus old man drives that thing back and forward, and they're paying his packet, I tell you, because I think it was $160, and that's, I think, getting looked after to get my boat. That's one way.
That's just one way.
One way with the boat and a couple of blokes in the car. Like, that is expensive. Anyway, so we travelled over there. And
you're being looked after because you're sleeping with his daughter.
Jesus, Patrick. Little shark, little fin I got. But he just said that.
Well, that's true.
I can't argue with that. Hopefully he's not listening to this show. I'll get bloody bashed tonight. Yeah. But back to what I was saying. The kingfish and fishery is out of control. Mallacoota has been red hot on the kingfish in Victoria, Pat. It has been such fishing so well. And I know Portland, the tuna and the kingfish out of Lake Julia Percy. And the reason I say the two different places is, and everywhere in between is fishing just as good. Port Phillip Bay Heads, I'll be honest, where I'm to boast around my, a lot of my fishing, has been hit and miss. Pat, I can't get a consistent 2 days or 3 days of weather. I just can't. Yep. I was away for the only two consistent days that we've had, which we've just gone by, which is Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But I go diving for crayfish. I've caught stuff all crayfish this year. And last year, I didn't do a lot because I hurt my back. But I got a lot more than I have this year because I can't see. Just because of that easterly wind. That's
been
that,
amazing that...
Well, your place easterly smashes into you. You got your new windows. How are they?
Well, I did laugh when you said the weather's been great. I tell you, it hasn't been great at my house. It's been just
you would cop the easterly straight terrible. Into your front your lawn, quite ferocious to be honest with you. But that wind that comes down just dirties everything up. It just gets hard. And the kingfish, we like that clean water. For some reason, we haven't had that current run down yet. I'm only getting the other day when I was out offshore, I had 16.8. Like, that's cold. Usually we're at like 19 degrees. And people go, oh, it's only 2 degrees difference. That's a hell of a lot. Not only do you notice it when you're diving, you notice the fish would be noticed it. And that's when the fish will follow that certain temperature. And Gwayne comes on the show and talks about that prime 18 degrees every single week. And that's why the kingfish have been quite hard to get this year. The conditions not allowing you to get out there. The tuna have been pricks of things. That's the best way to explain it. They have not... Oh, they will come good. I think they will come good once the temperature does its thing in a month. I reckon they will start to feed like they did last year. We'll get the consistency where we get them every single day. But they have been hard. Whiting have been amazing. They just keep getting better and better. The flathead, which people often show not a lot of interest in, they are fishing really, really well. Those big blue spots you catch while you're fishing for the whiting. And also, you can target them if you head to the right spot, such as anywhere where there's a sandbar and a bit of current around Queenscliff. Flathead love the edges of the sand and the gutters. You can get up on that sandbar, drop your burley cage that you use for your whiting, that lead burley cage we talk about all the time, drop it down to the bottom, load it up with pillies, just wait 10, 15 minutes and you'll get one flatty, then you'll get three, then you'll get five, and it won't be like red hot like you drift for them and catch small ones, but they'll all be oversized. They'll be that 30 plus centimetres, up to 70 centimetres at times. So they're really starting to come in. And I know Chriso from Gone Fishing Charters, the other day on his charters, I think on his charter, he ended up getting them 140 nice sand mixed with tigers offshore. So yeah, it's great to see that whole fishery come into play. And I've got a question for you, Pat. We've had fisheries on numerous times, and they've said to us, squid fishing, there's more squid around than ever before, blah, 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 biomass squid's out of control. Now, do you reckon pressure has made the squid fishery harder? Now, what I mean by that is, I used to go out and go, I'm going to go get 20 squid and come in. Not talking on the eggs when they're like that. I'm talking about when they're up at the island, St. Leonard's. You can go out and get them in no time and come back home. If I were squid fishing now, I'm like, I need to allocate 2 hours to get a dozen, half a dozen, or a dozen squid. That's with a mate.
I think it's seasonal. And it also, you're basing it off where you fish, which is Port Phillip Bay. And at the moment, what we've had is really average weather. So what can you do when you've got average weather? Well, you can stay in close and you can search the squid beds.
Mm.
So there's not as many heading offshore. Obviously, there's been a little bit of tuna fever that we've experienced down here. But by and large, you know, you want to enjoy yourself when you go out fishing and the weather's been terrible. So I think that's had a bit to do with it. Anyway, we've got a huge show coming up. Up next, the Social Club. You're listening to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich. And don't forget to download the new Real Adventures app. It has all our latest podcasts, fishing news, tips, and recipes.
You're listening to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years.
Welcome back to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years. It's time for the social club. And this is a question we've often been asked, Redmond. Cats versus mono hulls. From Tim Parents, I think it's Parents. Oh, my God.
It looks right.
Tim Parents. Right. In the market for a new boat, boys. A lot of charter boats use cats. I'm more of a mono hull owner. Have owned small tinnies. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think cats have their purpose. I'm not a fan of them. I get scared in them, to be honest with you. I haven't had enough experience driving them to be comfortable with them. I know some fantastic fishermen out there have their cats, and they love it. That's their favourite boat. But I have been on
Cassar fishing charters.
Yep, Richie Abala has a big cat. I know some. There's a lot of respected fishermen out there that know their stuff, and they love their cat. They literally love their cat.
So what are your trepidations?
Well, I've had a mate. I had a mate buy a cat. He spent $220,000 on a cat.
Yep,
not even more than that, and he sold it the week later.
So for those at home listening, a cat or a twin hull boat is literally a boat that has two hulls versus a mono hull, which is a single hull.
So water runs through the middle, to give you a description if you're not sure.
Yeah. Majority of the time, the boats that you'll see anywhere and everywhere are mono hulls, but quite a few professional fishermen and the like use power cats.
Yep.
I owned a Markham Whaler for a short period of time.
What boat haven't you owned?
Well, I've enjoyed my boat. Anyway, I had that for a little bit. It was, honestly, it could be the most picturesque, beautiful day, and we would get wet in it because the water would get sucked back in. It was a great little boat, but geez, it was wet.
Well, I don't feel comfortable with them. Quite often when you're trimming engines out, like for instance, just to size, I guess put the sizes together. If I was driving a big boat, say around that 24 plus foot, 23 foot, like for Formula or whatnot, whatever it is, a big North Bank, I'd trim the engines out. If I've got twin engines, which you do on the bigger boats, you trim the engines out. I don't tend to use trim taps. Yep. I tend to use the trim on engines. And with your cat, you need to do the same as that, but it's the opposite. And what a cat does, so you've got to do the same trimming, but it's the opposite engine that you think you've got to trim to hold, so the hull doesn't lean in. And what the hull will do is one side of the hull grabs the water and the other side sort of lets go. And then it grabs again and you pulls back in like that. They travel terrific. I've seen them travel in the water. They look great, but you need to learn how to drive it. You can't just go out there and spend and buy a 30-foot Noosa cat and expect to feel comfortable straight away. You need to learn how to drive it. They are tough to drive. At the start, like I said, I'm not experienced enough to drive it, and other people are. I'm not taking this. Like, just listen.
And you've
I'm not
spent
taking
your life on boats.
I have, and I have driven numerous cats. I've driven Noosa cats. I've driven Kevlar cats. And when I'm driving, I'm like the boat starts leaning in. I'm like, oh Jesus! Like, hold on, it starts to go the other way. I'm like trying to work it out. So I just haven't done it enough. I'm saying this. So if you are out there and you are going to buy a cat and you want to spend a hell of a lot of money, please go test drive it before you did what. My mate, an associate did of mine, because he spent a lot of money. And he actually spoke to me about it. So, yes, they can be in their own little ballpark, but they are a great boat. I'm going to stick to the mono, if you ask me.
Next question is from Sam. Red, what are your thoughts on pre-rigged rigs, e.g. whiting and snapper rigs, like you buy off the shelf versus making your own?
I'm going to ask you a question back, Patrick, off the back of this. Have you ever caught a snapper or a whiting with a bit of red fluff in its mouth or in its guts?
No.
No, either have I. So those little red bits that you have hanging off your hooks that they cost $12 a rig for, shove them because they are crap. Yep. When I say that they're not crap, sorry, I shouldn't say they're not crap because they're hooks, they still work. But what happens, here's a question, another one for you. What happens when you go deeper than 5 meters with color? What's the first color to disappear?
Red.
Yes. So when you've got that little red thing that's hanging off your hook and you've dropped it for snapper in 20 metres of water or 15 metres of water.
Thinking it's going to work.
Thinking that red's going to attract that fish. It doesn't work like that as such.
Yep.
I always make my own rigs. I trust my knots. I trust the hook choices that I use. I know what they are. a lot of companies will go out there and not a lot of companies, some cheap people and people trying to rip you off will put crap hooks, like they might go online and buy some overseas Chinese thing. They might buy 500 hooks for $10 and they'll use them on their snatches. Others use fantastic quality hooks. They might buy them through Blackmagic or they might import their own quality hook, which some do. But for me, the snapper snatches are a gimmick for me. I've never liked them. Everyone who follows what I do pretty hard knows how much I don't like them. And like I said to you before, the day I catch a whiting and it has a bit of red fluff in its stomach, I'll probably start using that bit of fluff. So that's when, but like I said, you can save yourself a lot of money by making your own rigs. I find when I went away during the week to Welshpool, that night we had a few beers. Boys had a couple of beers. We rigged up our rods, talked a bit of laugh. It's fun. We had a good time. We rigged our stick baits. We rigged our 464 kingfish rods because they could have been pricks. You don't know what they're going to do that next day, as we know. But it's about having a bit of fun and enjoying it with the boys.
So for those that aren't comfortable in tying their own rigs, what's a way in order to get something that you can trust, but you're not necessarily buying off the shelf, you know, Kmart pre-rigged?
Buy a subscription to Salt Guide. No, I'm serious. We go through every knot, that from FG knots to uni knots to blood knots. We show you in depth how to do it. There's another thing called, I'm going to cut myself here, but another thing called YouTube, which you can watch stuff. You can save pre-rig knots. You got to remember, that guy that got employed at the tackle store could be the best knot tyer in the world. Or he could also be you, Pat, and he's tied 10 knots in his life. So you just don't know what you're going to get. And if you get a 10-kilo fish and that knot pulls off, he's looking at me with a smirk. I was trying to talk so he couldn't get a word in.
You tie knots, I tie lots.
Yeah, you just go bang. but like if you're on a, say, you get this fish, massive 6-8-kilo snapper, you've never caught one before and it comes up, and you see, oh, how cool is this, and all of a sudden that knot slips off that hook where the glue hasn't sat properly. If they're using glue, if they haven't tied it on properly and the knot slips out,
you'll never forget yourself.
Well, you're never going to forget the tackle store either. But if you do it yourself, at least you can be angry at yourself.
Yeah.
But that tackle store is going to cop a flogging off you. I'll never buy. So just, yeah. That Paul Worthing's going to kill me because he's just lost 10% of his sales. Sorry, Paul. Last question. Fire it with me to ask you, or you ask me?
No, you far away.
Far away. It's from Mitch. Fishing for gummies at night versus day. Pros and cons.
Well, I've got an easy one for you. You've proved you catch plenty of them during the day, so why would you do something during the night that you can do during the day?
Yeah, I love sleep. It's one of those things. Oh, Finn during the week. Oh, my God, I could have killed him. First real bad night for a long time during the week. It was bad. We had a shock. Anyway, fishing during the night for gummies.
Hey, welcome to my world. Why do you've got two kids? Someone once
described... I'm not that stupid now. I've decided, Kari, we're not having three or four kids. It's one.
Someone once described having two kids to me, because Mads was pregnant with Felicity, our second child. So what's it like? And they described it as, imagine you're drowning and someone throws you a child. That's what it's like.
Maybe you've just got no
control. So you're drowning and someone throws you a child. There you go. Just add that to your troubles. Just nightmare.
Sounds pretty fun. Anyway, back to the gummy sharks. Fishing at night can be a real prick because sea lice.
Yep.
And sea lice are very hard work. Tidal waters, if you get the strong tide running, they can be a little bit less. If you fish the full moon, they're going to be less. New moon, they're going to be bad. But
there is an old wives' tale to say, if you want to catch gummy sharks, you know, you're best catching them at night.
Yeah,
that's not the case.
It's 100% not the case. I never now chase them at night. If I was to do anything, it'd be early morning. Like, as in, for instance, say I had a tide this time. Say sunrise is at around 5:36 at the moment. So say I had a tide finishing at 8, I'd be there sort of around that 5:30 as that sun comes up into that tide. But that's probably more to do with the tide. And selecting the time of the day for where you fish. So if I'm going to fish in the bay in Simmons Channel, which is around 10 metres deep, ideally I'm not going to go there in the middle of the day. I'd rather fish that tide in towards dark, or like I said before, in the morning. I'm fishing 30 metres in the ocean. Gummies are everywhere. You can fish all day for them. But if I'm fishing 10 metres off the back of Sorrento for a gummy, I'm not going to do that in the middle of the day either. I'm going to go out deeper.
Yeah.
So it's more comes down to what you like doing. I love my sleep. I tell you, Pat, it's a great thing to have sleep. And yeah, fishing during the night, especially overnight, it really stuffs me. I get tired, real tired the next day, and I don't want to do anything. But you will catch, don't listen to that wives' tale. It's definitely a wives' tale, and you will catch gummies through the day. You just got to be slightly smarter about how you go about it. Fresh bait, catching your wrasse and whatnot, and you're going to, yeah, you have no dramas catching yourself a nice 20 kilo fish.
This is Real Adventures for BF Goodrich. They've made a lot of memories in their 150 years. Most importantly, driving you to create memories of your own.
All aboard for Dometic. From first-time campers to hardcore outdoor adventurers and everything in between, no matter your experience level, Dometic.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's now time for All Aboard. For Dometic, everything you need for adventuring, big or small. And today's guest is Frogley's Pry Angler, Dan Mackerel. Good morning, Dan.
Morning, Az. How are things, mate?
Not too bad. Thanks for joining us this morning. And you've been doing a bit of gallivanting around the coast lately and a bit of fishing in my neck of the woods down at Port Phillip Bay. Take us through your last trip.
Yeah. Oh, look, I've just the experience and knowledge of one Aaron Hadgood's been fairly handy, actually. I don't get down there too often, so... I put the call out. I said, mate, give me a time and a place to be. And he gave me GPS coordinates and said, anchor up on this position at this time. And I thought, the last trip I went down there, mate, we had 30 squid in an hour. And then jumped onto one of your whiting spots and three on board. We had a bag out, 60 whiting in just over an hour, mate. It was bloody awesome. So appreciate the heads up and probably kudos to what you guys are doing with Salt Guide. I think it's pretty amazing that you guys have got all this up-to-date intel and, yeah, the proof's in the pudding with that one for me, so well done.
Well, with what you just said then, and this is all around the country, as you know, even with your broom fishing you do with your tournaments and whatnot, it's the timing, isn't it? It's not so much as going to a spot, and that's what we're trying to teach people, is not this about what we do, but it's about the importance of being at the right place at the right time, isn't it? And I don't know with what you do with the brim, right time, right spot with your tournament, but I'm sure there's different bite times for brim, like some low light, things like that.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And again, you look at these sort of tidal situations too, like even the small estuaries, they don't have much tidal movement, but it can actually have a really big play on the fish's movements and what they're doing at any given time. So I suppose your knowledge of working with the flood and the dirtier water for whiting, I suppose it all makes a lot of sense. And I suppose when you go down and do it a bit more, it makes more and more sense every time too. So
yeah, well, that's learning every day when you're fishing. And one thing I want to learn is I can't catch a squid to save my life lately. Where were they?
Well, we just launched at St. Leonard's and it was a really nice day, and I was just sort of blown away by how many boats are out, and we just sort of jumped on Google Earth again, found another little grass bed, and we got out there. There's sort of no other boats around, and there's a lot of bait fish sort of flicking around on the surface, and it's probably some of the best squid fishing I've seen. Like, they'll fish high up in the water column in about 4 metres of water, and you could actually spot the squid chasing the bait schools behind it. So it was probably some of the easiest squid fishing and probably the most exciting we've done in a while. You sort of put in behind the bait that was getting harassed on the surface and be 4 or 5 squid on the back of it. So
are you in shock? I know you're not too used to a lot of boats in the water, but it's amazing how many boats are actually on the water, isn't it? Because obviously COVID, people can't travel. Were you in shock coming down to the bay and seeing how many people were actually out? Like, I say it, but to actually see it in yourself, how many boats are out?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like, there's a lot of popular spots, but in some of those areas, mate, you can nearly hop from boat to boat. We went down to the bite there at Queenscliff trying to get some squid on the top of the tide there at one stage, and it was just, I don't think you could find 50 metres to yourself. It was unbelievable. So we sort of hightailed out of there and tried to find something a bit quieter. But obviously with the COVID and everything that's gone on this way, then a lot of people are taking advantage of, I suppose, what we've got and the beauty of what we have around our local areas. So it is good to see, but it is very busy.
Take us through the southwest now. It's where you do a lot of your fishing, sort of around that Apollo Bay and obviously in the lakes and whatnot around there. What's been biting and how you've been travelling?
Look, it's been really good. I thought, like, the guys down at Apollo Bay are doing really well on the flathead. It's always a bit of a bread and butter species. You pick your weather windows in the mornings when the weather's nice and calm, and you can sort of scoot out anywhere between sort of Blanket Bay and Skeens Creek, and there's been any amount of flathead around in that 25 to 35 metres.
Yep.
The guys sneaking around to the lighthouse in the Noah have been doing pretty well with some kingfish. There's been a lot of tuna. Sounds like the tuna are pretty well right along the coast, actually right from Portland right through to sort of Western Port. Yeah, exactly. So they're very, very well spread. So it's pretty much pick what you want to do and you can really get it done. Like, there's probably one of the things I've sort of noticed this year, I'm not sure if it's been in other years, but a lot of the reef fishing at the moment, there's a hell of a lot of nanny guy around.
Yep.
The guys are sort of getting out and catching 10 to a dozen fish. So that's been really good. And a species that sort of turned up this year, probably a bit more prolific than it has in other years. So it's just an interesting one. It's certainly good on the table. So
now, outside the Porvoorde Bay heads here, the tuna have been pricks to catch. They've been extremely hard. Yep. They're only biting in rough weather and whatnot. And when there's no boats, as soon as it's calm, they're just sitting there sunning themselves. Down the southwest yep. there, are they doing that?
Yeah, they do that. And it's, look, it is frustrating, but it's also, like, it's pretty, the beauty of that sort of fishing. You can sort of do your best to sort of sneak up on the schools. And when they switch on, as you know, they'll pretty much eat anything. But, geez, it can be frustrating when there's a couple of hundred school tuna just sort of swimming around the circle. And it doesn't matter what you're showing, they're just not interested. So just the fact that they are so prolific and, well, but, you know, they've got to eat. At some sites, they've got to switch on. So if you can work out when that bite window is, or if you're there at the right time, throwing surface lures at tuna is pretty amazing.
Now, inland, you do a lot of that down sort of Peterborough way and whatnot. Yep. Take us through what's going on there.
Yeah, so they're all those systems are fishing pretty well. This time of year is really good. Water warms up, so the bream and perch will sort of push right up into the shallows to feed. So it's a great time to start tying on some surface lures. So if you like that sort of visual fishing, early morning or late in the evening, sort of really conducive to those sort of conditions. But they're all fishing very well. You've got the Eyre River, Hopkins, Boggy Creek, all those systems all on the coast there, fishing exceptionally well at the moment.
Any signs of mulloway?
Not so much, actually. It's more, I actually prefer to chase the mulloway when it's a bit cooler and the water's a bit dirtier. So I think this time of year, I spend most of my time fishing in less than a metre of water. So I don't sort of come across. They'll be there. There's no doubt they're there. But they don't sort of frequent the shallows as much as they do in the winter months. So
Now, you've got right down to Portland, obviously, too. The tuna are going off Julia Percy there, as well as the yep. kingfish. You did mention the kingfish around the shank. Not down the shank. What's it called? Down the Otway there under the lighthouse.
Yep.
Are you fishing the same techniques those guys are doing up there, or are you doing things a little bit different?
I think all techniques work. I think that probably the most frustrating thing about the Cape Otway Lighthouse and kingfish down there is they seem to always be mixed in with big schools of barracuda. So I think the only friend of them is the tackle shop owners. So the guys throwing jigs are donating a lot of corn each day on those. So if you can work out where to catch your slimy mackerel and yakkers, that's probably your best way to target them. Because you're fishing sort of deeper water out there off the lighthouse, they don't seem to get to the surface as much as they do off like in North Shore and those sort of things as well. So it's sort of deep water sort of fishing with your live baits and jigs and soft plastics if you can. And then, obviously trying to work out and differentiate your schools between the kingfish and barracuda. So.
Very good. Well, that's all the news from the southwest. That was Dan Mackerel, Frogley's pro angler, and that was All Aboard.
Red's Review for Club Marine. Insure your boat with Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance. Call and ask for a PDS to see if this insurance is right for you.
It's now time for Red's Review, and the review today is coming off the back of what we've been speaking about throughout the show, my trip down to Port Welshpool. And today it's the Dometic PJS 118 Portable Jump Starter, because when I headed down there, nothing worse than having a flat battery. And I'm not talking about getting to the ramp. That wasn't going to be the issue. We were staying on the boat for a couple of nights. So obviously when I'm traveling throughout the day, the alternator's doing its thing. It's charging and whatnot. But when I'm anchored up in the cove there, having a couple of beers with a mate, just sitting there relaxing, enjoying our steaks that we cooked, the live bait pump's still going. We're catching liveys and yakkers, having a bit of fun. That pump's going. Your bilge pump might come on here and there. You might turn lights on. Some people have got underwater lights. So that can be a worry with draining your battery. Yes, there's two batteries in my boat, dual battery system, and I did select it to one battery and left the other one for, obviously, to start the engine the next day. But in the back of your head, it's just always there going, crap, is it charged, or is the boat charged, or is everything going to be okay? Is the engine going to start? So by having the portable jump starter pack in your boat from Dometic, I think it's a must. You might be able to help someone else out down the boat ramp as well who rocks up for their trip and they've traveled 2 hours and they get down there and their battery is dead, and you'll be able to lend this to them and they'll be able to jump start their boat. I'm sure they'll go out and buy one. One thing that I do like about this jump starter pack in particular is the built-in LED torch. Now, boat batteries can be in the most inconvenient spots at times. They can be tucked away in the wells at the back. They can be in all sorts of different spots. But it's got a built-in LED torch, which, like I said, batteries aren't always in the light. And when you've got dead batteries, a light comes in handy. So it's got the torch attached to it, which is just literally pressed with a button on the side, which activates it. It's got different voltage buttons. You can adjust to what voltage you do want to use. It's seriously easy charging. It's literally USB, so it's just convenient. You don't have to carry around massive leads or anything like that. It's literally just a small USB charger. It's got an LED screen, which displays the status of your charge and your voltage indicator as well. And it also comes with everything you need. And what I mean by that, your alligator clips, 8 clips, your 12-volt charger, and it comes with a storage case, which I think is a must to have on a boat. Like, you don't want, you want to have a good case that comes with one of these, because obviously salt and whatnot on the boat can be a pain in the backside. It wrecks everything. So if you are going to leave it on the boat in itself, make sure that you do use the case. But if you're going to leave it at home and take it out just when you go fishing, which isn't a bad option to do, because the missus, I've used it on her car. I haven't used it on the boat yet, but I've used it on her car, and it started with these. And I leave mine in the shed, and when I do trips like this, I tend to take it with me more often rather than leaving it in the boat, because it's not too cheap, but it's not expensive. They're around $169, which it's not a lot of money for something that's like, could, when you stuck out in the ocean, it could start your battery. So I think money isn't a factor when it comes to this. So this is the Dometic PJS 118. It's the portable jump starter. So make sure you do check it out. Head to Dometic.com and check out all the further information that you need to get yourself a jump pack.
That was Red's review for Club Marine. Need insurance for your boat or jet ski this summer? Get a quote from Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance. Call or search Club Marine to find out more. Ask for a PDS to see if this insurance is right for you. You're listening to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years.
Welcome back to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years. It's time for Red's Tip. Redmond,
this week, Pat, it comes off the back of probably every conversation that we have with anyone regarding kingfish, and we're going to do it again, and it's about looking like an echidna or a porcupine, and that's having everything ready to go. Now, I target them during the week, and my whole plan was to catch them on live baits. Now, it's all right when you have live baits and everything's good and they're eating your life baits, but what about when they're on the surface away from you and they're tailing through the water nicely and you can't get close enough with your live baits? You need to be able to cast to them. So what I'm trying to say is have everything ready. It's about getting ready the night before, not when you're on the boat. So we got up there on the Tuesday night to fish, and when we were up there to fish, when we're up there, unpacked the boat. Everything was out of the boat. I said, boys, all right, let's sit down, have a beer. I went down to the pub, had a nice meal, and then I said, let's go back, get everything ready. I literally sat 264,000 rods down on the side of the room. I said to the boys, that one's for this one's for that one's for this one's for that. And there's certain reasons why. One's a casting rod. I can cast further distance. It's got a nice taper on it, so when the fish is fighting far from you, you've got the nice angle, but you've also got a nice pull when it's pulling down at the boat. Then I've got my live bait rods, which are quite strong, heavy rods, so when they grab it at the boat near the bottom, I can stop them from getting to the bottom. And then you've also got your jigging rods, which is specified jigging rods to catch kingfish. So,
but they'll have obviously different weighted jigs, so you need a few of them, so they're just bang ready to go.
Everything needs to be ready. I had everything rigged up, so I had all my bungee casts on. I had a bungee cast. I had a popper on, which I don't like poppers for kingfish, but I had it to attract. That's what I had it out there for. I had two jig rods for the boys to jig, because I'm not stupid enough to jig until the fish eat, then I'll jig because it's too hard. But then I've got I had three live bait rods ready to go as well, and just a couple of others, bits and pieces. I obviously had rods to catch bait that I had to rig to, burley cages. Everything was ready to go. So don't get up on the boat, because there's nothing worse going, crap, there's the kingfish. And the thing with kingfish is they can be there, and if you hook that one fish, you could catch them for the next 1.5 hours. You could catch them for it and have the time of your life. If you're tying knots and you're trying to follow these fish and all of a sudden they disappear, they are gone. You might not see them for the rest of your trip, and that's your trip done. So you've gone from landing 12 kingfish to catching none in 2 days fishing. So be ready, have everything ready. And the reason that we repeat this is I get a hell of a lot of emails, messages through our social media platforms, through our Real Adventures app gets hammered with this question. It's about what do you use for kingfish? What do you use for kingfish? I use everything, and everything's ready to go before I go out and fish, rather than quickly going, oh, bang, I need to tie this knot.
What's the balance of, of having a casting rod rigged and ready to go that has really minimal poundage, so say 15 to 20 pound line, in order to get your extra distance in case every time you're coming up on the kingfish or whatever fish it might be.
So what's
they're just spooking. So how low will you go in order to give yourself an actual chance at catching?
As in line class?
Line class.
I was running, so the fish that were on the surface weren't big. So I just, once again, going to contradict what I said, but I ended up dropping to 40 pounds. So I had 80 on them.
Yep.
But I ended up dropping to 40 because once I could see them, I stood up on the side of the north bank and I could see them that weren't big fish. So I dropped down to 40 pound leader. And on my rod, the boys were using the 30 pound rods in the braid. But to be honest with you, that I find with kings and tuna, when they're going to eat, they're pretty much going to eat. Yep. And it's more to get the bite. Sometimes they can be finicky at times, but I find when they're finicky, they tend to be not on. They're done. Like, you're not going to catch them. It's when the way you're winding that bungee casting, and it works really well with 40 pound leader. So that's why the popper was a bit heavier, but I only used the popper to drag them over to the boat. They come over and say, "What the hell is that splash?" And the best example Gwayne has ever said is they are like cats. Like, if I threw a ball over there, the cat, and had it on a string and pulled it over to me, it'd come over and it'd play with it, and then it'd probably scratch it six times. And the kingfish was the same thing. I actually cast the popper over, and the boys, and then Mitch casted the stick bait. He hooked up, and then Zane went straight to the jig under the boat, and we were in about 30 metres, and he dropped the jig down, and then Zane was on the jig. So what I did was the popper brought him over, the stick bait also brought him over but hooked up, and the fish come with that popper, then Zane hooked up on the jig. So back to your point, rather, with the casting distance as well, is I was actually light on with braid on a couple of rods. So I was trawling the other week out of Point Lonsdale here where we got those tuna, and I had a felt like a 104-way tangle. It's only three rods, but it was just an absolute, you should have seen it. There was line everywhere. It was a mess. I actually had a couple of rods that were quite light on with line, and one of them was my casting rod, and it was probably half spooled by the time I'd lost 100 metres of it, because it was stuffed. And I said the first thing, Zane's like, "Oh, I'd be right. We're only catching like king. Like, they're only like, nah, we need to, if those kings have been pricks and I can't get close enough with the boats, maneuver the boat over to them, I want to have that extra 20 metres of cast." So the fuller you have your spool of line, whatever it is, the further you can cast, because it comes off the reel a lot nicer than when it's quite low. So that's what you want to do. People will say, this comes back to putting your line on your reel. People say, "Oh, get it on nice and tight." But once you cast that line out once, it's going to come back at whatever your rate is on you're working that bungee cast anyway. So keep it nice and full. Have the line that matches the reel. So a 30-pound line matched my, I think it was a 6,000 Stratic I had on it. So a lighter reel, not running the Saragossas, because the Saragossas is quite a heavy, chunky reel.
They're not as nice to cast.
And I just think those Stratics are great. I think they're, for price, like, you can go get your 5,000 Stellas and whatnot, but you're paying $1,200 where they're when I've literally got 100 of them, I can't afford that much in reels. So it's literally $300, whatever they are, give or take, and you can get yourself a quality reel that I've caught. I've had these set for two seasons now, and I think one's played up on me because I literally, that one that we had that big fish on down in Hogs Creek that time, that's the only, we've caught 40 kilo kingfish on those 5,000.
The tuna you lost.
40 kilo tuna. Yeah, we've caught, literally last year, I would have landed, no exaggeration, well over 50 tuna outside of Bowen Heads, all pretty much on those 5,000 Stratics, and they're still going today. So they're a good reel to buy. They're nice to cast with, but when I trawl and whatnot, I like to have those Saragossas that are more girthy and stronger in the, basically stronger in the backside. So that there, be ready for your kingfish, that's the tip.
Beautiful work. It's time for the flying gaff, and you always know when Nick Kyrgios is sort of trending on Twitter and social media and the like. Two things have happened. There's controversy somewhere, or he said something. And unusually, he's fired everyone up for the right reason in absolutely going to town on Novak Djokovic and quite a few of the professional tennis players that have landed in Australia and complained about their lockdown conditions. Well, the last time that we checked, the country and the world's been in lockdown, and as Victorians, there's been plenty. You, Redmond, are a great example.
And I got it
gallivanted
off
up north.
I got it off a
but
lot you'd bit
been in lockdown
than,
for years.
I got off a bit easier than the Melbourne crew too.
So the flying gaff this week goes to anyone complaining about lockdowns.
Headlines now: Dangerfield gaffs at Djokovic.
Get real, because we're going fishing. Thanks for listening to Real Adventures.
brought to you by BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years.